Good morning. Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. More than 76,000 Polish workers are out on strike this morning. As Bert Quint reports, the latest protest came at the shipyard where the Solidarity Movement was born 8 years ago.
Strike banners went up again at the Gdansk shipyard today, a major escalation in the wave of strikes that has hit a dozen coal mines and shut down the Baltic coast port of Szczecin. Lech Wałęsa issued the strike call yesterday. He said to go on strike would be to risk harsh repression, but that the time had come to stand up and show we exist. Wałęsa said he had received unofficial word that the regime finally was willing to deal with Solidarity and offered to delay the Gdansk strike by a week if authorities would promise by last night to negotiate. There was no promise, and this morning the strike began. It's in support of demands by coal miners for salary increases and for a legalization of the outlawed Solidarity Union. There was a wave of strikes in Poland last spring, triggered by drastic price increases. This is far more serious. The coal miners are the most pampered of Poland's workers because the mines provide the country with its biggest supply of foreign currency. The fact that they are striking is evidence of the despair caused by the price increases, which were to be the first major step in an economic reform program. Shutting down the mines and a port, and now a shipyard, makes an already miserable economic situation even more desperate. Bert Quint, CBS News, Warsaw.
Chanting "Russians go home," 10,000 Czechoslovaks marched in Prague in the biggest demonstration since 1969, recalling the 20th anniversary of the Soviet invasion. The BBC's David Blow was there.
The demonstrators had gathered during the day in Wenceslas Square in the center of Prague. For some hours, their numbers were quite small, but in the late afternoon, they began to increase dramatically until there were as many as 10,000, the great majority of them young people. Shortly after 7 o'clock in the evening, they began to march down the square towards the old town. Some of them held high the red, white and blue flag of Czechoslovakia. They sang the national anthem, holding up their hands in the V for victory sign, and chanted slogans like "Russians go home," "We want freedom," and "Dubček, Dubček, Dubček," the name of the Czechoslovak leader during the Prague Spring.
After 3 hours, police moved in with clubs and dogs, beating and detaining scores of people. A much smaller demonstration in Moscow has broken up with 154 arrests, Bill McLaughlin reports.
Moscow authorities must have been expecting a much bigger turnout. Eyewitnesses say there seemed to be more police and troops than protesters at a demonstration yesterday planned to mark the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia 20 years ago. The demonstration never really got underway. Some 500 dissidents converging at Moscow's Pushkin Park never even had a chance to unfurl their banners before the police and soldiers swooped in to break up the gathering. A solid wall of police pushed the demonstrators out of the park and into the street, where about 150 of them were arrested. The Soviet media today, as is normally the case, ignored the protest. Bill McLaughlin, CBS News, Moscow.
10 points ahead of Michael Dukakis in a new Newsweek poll, Vice President Bush still faces questions about his choice of a running mate. Jacqueline Adams reports.
The Republicans' vice presidential candidate, Dan Quayle, is in Washington today for the first of two intense days of schooling in running a national campaign. George Bush, meanwhile, will stand before the veterans of foreign wars in Chicago and defend Quayle's Vietnam War service as he did yesterday in Springfield at the Illinois State Fair.
In him, we have a man that is 41 years old that did serve in the National Guard with pride and with honor.
Bush's three-day appeal to ethnic blue-collar Reagan Democrats in key Midwestern states has been overshadowed by Quayle's National Guard controversy. But as he prepares to campaign in the far west, the vice president is optimistic. His crowds have been large and friendly, and the man who said polls don't matter now likes the fact that some show him leading Michael Dukakis.
Even these polls that had me kicked and kicked hard seem to be going in the right direction.
Nonetheless, the Democrats don't intend to let the Quayle issue die. Jacqueline Adams, CBS News, Springfield, Illinois.
This morning, Quayle sought to put the controversy behind him.
The American people want to talk about the jobs. They want to talk about the future. They want to talk about preserving their freedom. They want to know about Dan Quayle beyond all these scuttlebutts of National Guard and things of that sort. We will get on to those issues, and we'll start hopefully Wednesday.
Reports now say at least 800 people lost their lives in the strong earthquake that struck yesterday along the mountainous frontier between India and Nepal. Satish Jacob of the BBC says monsoon rains are hampering efforts to help survivors.
More than 25,000 people have lost their homes. There were small huts made of mud and thatch. These people are now being taken to makeshift camps and school buildings which are still intact. Apart from that, hospitals are running short of medicines. Medicines are now being supplied from Calcutta, Bombay and Delhi. There are special planes and helicopters which are being used.
The early morning quake triggered waves that swamped boats and drowned dozens in neighboring Bangladesh. South Africa today outlawed the End Conscription Campaign, a nationwide group that for 4 years has opposed the mandatory draft of white men. Martha Teichner reports.
By banning the organization, the government is slamming closed one of the last legal windows of anti-apartheid dissent left in South Africa and is declaring in the harshest terms its unwillingness to tolerate the draft resistor crisis it considers a threat to national security. Today's ban of the End Conscription Campaign comes as an increasing number of white South Africans have lost their lives in Angola, a 12-year-old war that has been called South Africa's Vietnam. The irony of the government's crackdown is that a new round of talks begins in just 2 days to bring an end to the Angola war. Martha Teichner, CBS News, Johannesburg.
Having brought down one president, 20,000 Burmese went back into the streets of Rangoon today. They were blocked by soldiers, but there are no reports of violence. Officials in the tiny Central African nation of Burundi said today at least 5,000 people were massacred last week in tribal fighting that sent 35,000 people fleeing across the northern border into Rwanda. Earlier, unofficial reports had claimed 24,000 people were killed in fighting between the majority Hutu tribe and members of the Tutsi tribe, which controls the military and government. A fire in the locomotive out of an Amtrak passenger train last night near Grove, Maryland, forced evacuation of its passengers and blocked the New York-Washington rail corridor for 4 hours. There were no injuries. In New York City last night, police say a drunken driver was beaten and seriously hurt by a mob after his van struck a mother pushing a baby carriage, killing her 4-month-old son. A Los Angeles bus driver was killed yesterday when a tire flew off a car on the Harbor Freeway and crashed through the windshield of his bus. Two passengers grabbed the wheel and guided the bus to safety. The car was found abandoned, its driver gone. The dollar is higher today. Gold is off some $2 in London. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is ahead 1.25 points at 2017.25. Big Board volume 20,460,000 shares. It's 7:10.